Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tide Chaser's very second episode. Since you've already listened to our intro, you guys are coming on now and listen to our very second episode. We got a very important guest, very renowned in the fishing community. Everyone probably knows him. You'll hear him in just a few moments. But before that, I'd like to let you guys know where you can find us on the podcast. We'll be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Alexa, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castro, CastBox, and Podchaser. Now, if you're looking for us on Instagram, we're going to be on Tide_Chaser. Definitely, once again, Tide_Chaser. That's Instagram. If you're looking for us on Facebook, we are on Facebook at Tide Chasers Podcast. We will be coming up with a YouTube channel pretty soon, so all you got to do is search in the box, look for us on YouTube. Well, at this time, once again, my name is Kwa. I'll be your host, and also we have my co-host, as always, Mr. Dan Mancari. Go ahead, chime in, buddy.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Super excited for our guest today. Big-time fisherman. We've fished with him multiple times for different species. Solid guy. We're really happy to bring him on board and have him as our first guest. Very excited. Have a lot to talk about. And let's jump into it, man.
All right. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I'd like you guys to meet Mr. Salt Heart Fishing himself, Mr. Lee Wakefield, and his brothers will be on future podcast, then we'll bring them all on. But as of right now, we got Mr. Lee Wakefield on board. How you doing, buddy?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Not bad. Welcome, man. How's everything going over there in the fishing community and the life?
Can't complain. Just getting through some winter doldrums and looking forward to spring right now.
Join the club.
Sounds like all of us, man.
I haven't been fishing since November.
Me and Lee's gotten out for trout. We got out for trout for a little bit.
Slacking.
All right. So let's just kick this thing off real quick. All right. Where did this all start? Lee, you tell us. Were you an infant in your mom's belly with a fishing rod? What were you doing? You tell us where this all obsession started.
Well, I'd have to give credit to my dad for that. We fished when as long as I can remember, probably couple years old. Couple of my first memories were walking the beaches, Sandy Hook. I remember him walking out to the sandbar to cast, just like I can faintly remember it, but next thing I remember is him walking back the beach with a striper 30 some inches long, and that I think I was hooked since that time. We also used to do some boat fishing in the rips in the Delaware Bay down at Cape May, and a couple times a year we would get out and catch some pretty big stripers, and I think that's where it all began.
What age were you about, Lee?
The beach trips, I was probably 5-6 years old, like where I can barely remember what happened. I just remember like a few scenes that like are etched in my mind. Pretty cool though. But and then the boat trips, anywhere from, you know, that age, maybe a little bit older because of, you know, what would be on a boat if I was quite that young, up until, you know, my mid-teens and late teens. And
then here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, man, you got trial by fire, man, running the beach on a 5 or 6 year old.
Yeah, like I said, I don't remember exactly. I just remember I was pretty young, like young enough to barely remember what was going on. Like thinking back now, I remember a little bit better what's going on now that I know the scope of things, but it was quite a while ago.
Gotcha. So I got to ask you, what's it like being part of a fishing family? Does it ever get competitive? You and your brothers all fish together. I've never seen any competitiveness. I've never seen any jealousy. You guys seem to celebrate one another, you know, take joy in each other's success, but is there any jealousy involved in there at all?
Honestly, I feel like you know us pretty well. There is absolutely none. There's been times where, you know, I'll be more happy to see one of my brothers, Joel or Seth, to hook up to a fish, especially, you know, a nice fish or something. And we've been on trips where like two of us will be on fish and the other one, you know, still hasn't landed one. I'm like, all right, well, take my lure. This is what's working for me. Try this, or, you know, and vice versa. They'll do the same thing for me. So it's, like I said, there's no jealousy whatsoever. We're all very happy for each other's success and individual success on each trip. And I honestly say that, you know, seeing their success makes me just as happy as if I was laying the fish myself.
That's how I am with my friends and my little brother. If I see them do well, it makes me happy too. So I share in that success. I'm not a jealous person. So I agree with that. Now, is there something that you do better than your brothers, or like vice versa? Like, let's say Seth, for example, is really great at this and Joel's really great at this. What is your go-to? Like, you know, I got to get my rod bent. What do you go to?
I could tell you probably what they do better than what I would do better. I know that, like, it's kind of funny because, like, different species, like, and it'll change up throughout the season, but like Seth will just be on fire with like one type of fish. And then all of a sudden, like, Joel will be on fire. Like, he's got it figured out. And we're all just like, we're all doing the same thing. And, you know, why is he on fish? And we're catching one or two to his five or six. But I don't know. I feel like my go-to is like the lightweight bucktail. Like, that's something that, like, I have tremendous amount of confidence in. And not that they don't use them, like, they use bucktails a lot too. But, like, usually Joel will be using, you know, three or four different types of lures, and I'll just stick with that bucktail because I know that I feel like that the confidence in that is what's going to get me a fish.
Gotcha.
Totally understand. I myself got to say, I'm a little jealous of Seth. He's been hopping on some unicorns, man. And I don't know. Steph is like, he's that guy that just picks up like just the coolest, nicest looking fish, man. But love him to death, man. Love Seth to death. I like his personality. I haven't fished with him yet. I fish with you and I fish with Seth. I mean, I fish with Joel, but I haven't fished with Seth yet. I got to get him on the boat this year.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen. No time. Yeah, I feel like, you know, reiterate the point of fishing with them is something I feel like is a blessing because there's never an outing that I'll be doing it alone, or, you know, there's always somebody there to like kind of push you along, or, you know, you're not sure if you're going to make that trip at night, you know, you're leaving at 10 o'clock, or, you know, one of them are always, if it's not one, then the other one can make it. And I've always got a fishing partner. So I feel like it's a pretty awesome thing to have them.
Yeah, totally. Just like your, you know, just since we're mentioning it real quick, you know, just like your little article that you wrote on the Water Magazine, right? About, right, you know, the privileges of fishing with your siblings. You know, we're going to touch bases on that a little bit later. But like you said, you guys get a chance or an opportunity, check out February's edition of On the Water Magazine. Lee wrote a little article in there, you know, the importance of why having his family there fish and the benefits of why you can cover a lot of water and stuff like that when you have more multiple family members fishing with you. And, you know, he explains in depth how it works. So if you guys want to check that article out, make sure you guys hop on the Water Magazine and check it out. It's a really good article. I read through it a couple of times and I loved it. I even got it autographed.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no doubt. Right.
So Lee, what is your favorite fishing season to ramp up for? Whether it be like fluke, stripers, freshwater trout, what season do you get just so excited for?
I would have to say stripers, just kind of what my most successful fish is. And my love since I was young, you know, that was just always, if you caught a striper, that was something special, you know, growing up. I feel like I fish a lot more now than I ever did, but, you know, growing up was like, you catch fluke, you catch whatever else. And then when you got a striper, that was something special. And I feel like now, like, season just opened March 1st, a couple of days ago. And not that to say that, you know, the bite's on fire or anything, but like, this is, I've been looking forward to spring bass for a good bit now.
Go time, right?
Yeah.
So is
the
there
water temps to, sorry, I just need the water temps to warm up just slightly and
a little bit.
It's go time.
Do you have a magical number? Everyone says there's a magical number for them. Do you have a magical number?
I would say like 50, 52, but I mean, it's not to say that you can't catch below that. You know what I mean? I think you'll start getting fish now, and the water temps aren't that right now either. So,
yeah, I remember years ago when the power plant up in Oyster Creek was still open, first day of March 1st, we were always out there. We'd catch a good half dozen easily. Now, what, since they closed it down, there's no warm water discharge. So now the fish are just spread out. You know, it's just harder to find them. I mean, not saying you can't find them. They're in deeper holes to stay warm. You just got to find those holes and work them a little, learn, you know, work your, you know, paddle tails and stuff a lot slower, literally crawl them on the floor because water's cold. They're not going to want to go after anything right now.
Yeah, I always say, like, in the beginning of the season, and it kind of translates through a lot of species, freshwater and whatever else, like, the water's the coldest right now, so try and think about where the warmest water in the body of water you're fishing. Good chance that's where the fish are going to be.
Cool. Now, are you excited to chase them, you know, on the rivers, on the spawning grounds? Or are you more excited to hit the sod banks and the beachfront to try and find them out there?
I haven't done a ton of in the rivers. I feel like I could enjoy it as much. There's good chance of using blood worms. I know you can get them on some plugs, but it's a lot more difficult. So I would say use throwing plugs in the bays, sod banks, and probably a couple months, it'll be the ocean front.
Cool. As of right now, what is your opinion on the state of the striper bass fishery? Like, how do you feel? Do you feel it's declining? Do you feel it's going up? How do you feel about the new regs that they came out that it's going to be one fish between 28 and 35? Do you feel that's going to help out? Or do you think it's actually going to more decline the class of fish that we're getting between 28 and 35?
Honestly, there's probably a lot more people that are, you know, the science behind it all. But my like take from what I know, which is not, you know, a ton, but I'm super happy that if you catch a monster, you know, female bass now that you can't keep it legally, to me, that's a win. I mean, some have an argument for slot, some have an argument against the slot, and I can see both sides, but like, I think it's a great thing that if you catch a huge fish, you know, especially one that's going to carry a lot of eggs, there you can't legally kill that fish. So every trophy fish that's caught now is going to be released. I think that's pretty awesome. But as far as like the amount of fish around, I mean, I talk to guys that have done this a lot more and a lot longer than I have, and they're saying, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there's a lot more fish around than there is right now. And I, you know, I believe them. I have seen that to some extent. I also feel like there's a lot of fish offshore. I feel like there's not as many reasons for those fish to travel and migrate close to land as there used to be, as far as the beach replenishment. You know, there's not places for them to stop. They usually follow the bait, and maybe the bait's not quite in for the same reasons, you know, up along the beaches, and a lot of the jetties are getting poured over with sand. So there's not a lot of places to hold the fish to where they used to be. And I think, you know, if the stocks could easily be declining, I also think that there's a lot of fish offshore that don't find any reason to come in along the beaches.
Yeah, that beach erosion, I saw a lot of it this fall and winter. We're going to be inundated with that beach replenishment all over again. It's just like a never-ending vicious cycle. Yeah. And I totally agree. Like inshore structure is non-existent in most of our waters that we fish, you know.
I saw a couple pictures like with a huge drop-offs on the beach, and then you would just see like a cut, you know, bowl. Jetties are showing up again. I'm just like, man, I haven't seen structure like that in a good while. Like, this could be good spring if it's, but I don't know how soon they're going to get on the replenishment or whatever. I'm sure it's like a never-ending cycle. They're going to be back on it soon.
Yeah, I mean, we'll I've noticed it this year. Like, I've taken my boat out up north, and a lot of guys that are complaining that the fishery is declining and stuff are a lot of them are surf casters. You know what I mean? Like, the beaches have been eroded. I mean, the fish just don't come close enough for surf casters anymore. Years ago, sure, 2015, 2016, definitely good runs, good fall beach runs. You know, the bunker came in, surf casters had an opportunity. I took my boat out quite a few times this year, and there's fish further offshore. You're right. You know, they are offshore. They're right on a 3-mile line. you know, you get out there at the right time, there's plenty of fish. You just got to find them. And then I have, you know, I've had tuna guys call me and they're like 15, 20 miles offshore. They're miles of fish, like literally miles of bass just on the surface feeding and migrating, you know, and they're just minding their business on that way. You know, they're just not, they didn't come in past the 3 mile line for us to find them. There's plenty of fish out there. I mean, I'm aware probably there is a huge decline, but I don't think it's that bad that they think it is. But I mean, with the 28-35, so I think it's perfect. It's a perfect size because we're releasing a lot of big breeders. But of course, you know, then that means that everyone's going to harvest 28 to 29 to 30. And those are future females that are going to be loading up on eggs too. So it's kind of like, it's like a double-edged sword. We release the big breeders that can release a lot more eggs. But then where people are harvesting the smaller breeders, which has an opportunity to breed multiple years.
Right.
So, and it's a tough situation for all of us, but I mean, I think it's a good size. Like a lot this year, I've seen a lot of boats were releasing a lot of big fish. I didn't see any floaters, you know what I mean? So that's definitely a good thing. And, you know, it's been all right. I think it's going to help us out a lot. You know, another few years of this, and I think the numbers will be, it'll slowly creep its way back up for us.
Yeah, I definitely think it's heading in the right direction. You know, something had to be done for a while. Nothing was done. And I feel like this is definitely heading in the right direction. I feel like there's the most important thing is just to make people aware with, you know, not just, you know, in a good way, be aware of the situation, be aware that like, you don't need to kill every fish you catch. You don't, you know, just someone posts a picture online, you don't need to just be telling them that you should have released that, you know, why'd you kill a fish? Just make them aware of the situation, you know, mm-hmm. of the state of the fishery, and, you know, do it in a nice way to where they're not just, you know, yapping back at you, like, and, you know, in a respectful way where they might actually understand what you're saying and might make a difference to what they do next trip out.
Yeah, the difference is like between fishermen like myself, you and Dan, you know, we practice conservation and awareness. You know, we try our best to let everyone know, you know, that, you know, this is our fishery. We're just trying to preserve it for, you know, future kids like Dan's kids. When they grow up, we want bass in the back for them to catch, you know, like all of us, you know, we just want to preserve it as much as possible. And, you know, and the way you say it too, you know, we're going to educate them. We're not just going to jump on them and say, hey, you got to release that. Just educate them. Why are we releasing them? Why they should release them. I mean, it's everyone legal's right to keep a fish. You know, we're not the fish police and just call out everybody, but you know, we just need to educate a lot of these fishermen and let them know why that we feel that, you know, you don't have to harvest every single fish you catch.
Yeah, and there's some more sustainable options out there anyway. I mean, most people you talk to, unless they live in Maryland where rockfish and striped bass are one and the same, and they eat them up as long as they can. I find that there are better tasting and better sustainable options that I've tried to talk people into harvesting other options. You know things like snakeheads, for example, very mild fish. You know, if you can find them in clean water. Great, great tasting fish, and you can keep as many of them as you want. Now, I don't do that. I release some. However, you know, I do keep some for my family if I catch them in clean waters. You know, there's always other options out there to keep our fisheries that are not healthy, you know, keep them moving along while we still want to eat fish. Great, fresh fish is king. You know, there's always another option out there. And sometimes those other options are easier to catch anyway. You know, white perch, for example. Can load up on them. They're great to take. They're great tasting fish. You know, there's a lot of other sustainable options out there that we can use to kind of take some pressure off the striped bass fishery, because, you know, they're getting at every angle. You know, they're getting it on shore, on the boats, back bays, in the rivers, and they're getting it while they spawn. You know, it's just, you know, the pressure on them is immense. They're this wonderful trophy game fish, or, well, we'd love for them to be a game fish, but this wonderful fish that we have to target. I would love for my son to be able to run the beach with me like you did with your dad, Lee, and, you know, try and catch these fish. Although I don't know how long I can do the whole run in the beach thing. That's why I got my kayak, but you know how that goes. So.
Okay. I'm sure I wasn't running too hard at 5 or 6 years old either, but I totally agree with what you're saying. Like once I started eating like fresh mahi or fresh tuna or just, you know, even fresh fluke, you know, I feel like, all right, well, I don't need to eat striper anymore. You know what I mean? Like there's a couple good reasons why I'm totally happy with just releasing every single fish I catch. And I honestly don't have an issue with someone keeping their limit, you know, one fish, you know, I don't think you're doing something wrong, but just moderation, you know, moderation is key. Like if you're doing it every single day, or, you know, you're on a boat with four people and you're doing it every single day like that. And that I'm not talking about the charter cats. That's, you know, right. They're doing their thing and I totally respect that. But I mean, like something's got to give, you know, if you go out killing fish every single day, like somewhere something's got to give. And that multiplied by however many people are doing it, just moderation, you know, one here and there, don't bring it home, stick it in the freezer. And who knows when you get it out, you know, just go out and catch another one when you're ready to eat another one.
That's another thing. Like everybody, like you see on the message boards on Facebook, all the groups, everybody attacks the commercial guys. They're making a living. They're feeding a family. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have a piece of this pie, you know, the recreational fishermen, the commercial guys, everybody has a stake in this game. Everybody is responsible. You know, I don't agree that the commercial fishermen should take the brunt of the blame. I see that all the time and it drives me nuts. Those are guys just trying to feed their families, man. Those guys just trying to do the right thing and feed their families. They have regulations. They have rules that they got to abide by as well. You know, we would go a long way in trying to be a little bit kinder to those guys. I mean, you know, we're all trying to feed our families. That's their operation. That's how they choose to do it. More power to them.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel too. I mean, I feel like it's all about management. You know what I mean? The overall management of the fishery, like I totally respect them. They're doing, and it's a lot of those guys will get someone that, you know, maybe fishes once a year and that's their only chance to, you know, keep a bass. And, you know, why wouldn't you? You know, I was in that situation before. So I don't have any issues with that. Like they're doing what they love for every single day. So that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, man. I think the last bass I kept was 2012. And that was because it was foul hooked. You know, there was nothing I could do. It was bleeding out and, you know, I kept it. So that's probably, yeah, 9 years. I haven't kept a bass in 9 years. Now I don't target them as much as you guys do, but, and part of that is because I think I'm trying to do my part by, you know, giving them a break. I have plenty of other stuff I can target. I spent a little bit of time here and there targeting them. And I think I will this year a little bit more than I have in the past, but you know, I gotta live by what I speak. And part of it is, you know, I'm adding extra pressure to those fish when I fish for them. You know, is it necessary? You know, sometimes it is, but I can just fish for something else. You know, I'd like to see that fish bounce back. And like I said, have my kids be able to fish for them too. So.
Yeah, it's a good thought process.
So since you're on a striped bass, let's get to the cream of the crop. Everyone's probably been listening, waiting to get to this part. How and when do you target them? Like, actually, you know, we know March 1st, Monday was opening day. We all know it's cold, water's about 40 degrees right now. It's not the easiest way to find them, but when do you start actually hunting for them?
I would say I probably won't try too hard for a few weeks now. I have like a feeling that it's going to be a little bit later than last year, just with the cold winter we had. And the water temperature is a little bit colder now. So I would say probably by the, you know, late, a little bit past mid-March to the end of March through April is probably when I'll start, you know, focusing on them.
You're right. You're right. I have buddies down south that said they're just kind of hanging right now. They're not moving, and they would ordinarily see them moving by now, you know, right. See them moving in the right direction. They're just camping. They're laying with their bellies on the dirt and just kind of hanging out until it's time. It's colder than it was this time last year. So they're not ready to roll yet.
So when you're targeting early, mid-March, April, first week, second week, are you bait fishing for them or are you artificial fishing for them?
I would say a little bit of both. I feel like if you're fishing in the rivers, I would probably use bait. Just because they're mostly going off of scent. Mm-hmm. But if preference, I would be throwing lures and big plugs for them. and through April, definitely plug.
Is your preference to chase them on foot or on boat? On a boat.
Honestly, I don't have a preference. I feel like I fish from foot a lot more. That's where my opportunities are. I'll get out on a boat a few times in the spring, a few times in the fall, throughout the summer in back bays. You know, I have some opportunities throughout the summer. I'll get out and chase them at sunrise, sunset. You know, you can catch them all summer long. But I wouldn't say a preference. I feel like you can kind of do more with a boat. You can get to a lot of different areas more easily, some areas you can't get to by foot. So there's definitely advantages to that. But as far as the preference, I feel like whatever comes down the pipe, I'm going to be swinging. You know, I feel like that's, I'm just happy if I'm on the water and casting.
Hear you. Yeah, I am no longer of the belief that boat fish don't count. So you're fine there with me. Since Qual has a boat, I got to like boats, right?
Yeah, we got to like boats.
I have a kayak, so that's kind of in between.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got a kayak that's kind of a boat, right?
I'll tell you what, though. I love bank fishing. I love it, love it, love it. It's like my roots, man. I feel like you put me on a bank next to somebody else that's a good fisherman, and I sometimes get competitive, but it's fun, man. I just feel like I can tackle the water in front of me, you know, a little differently than I can if I'm fishing vertically. You know, it's right. A little, I find that I can cover more water, you know, the right way, as opposed to drifting over a spot and never hitting again. You know, it's one of those things, you know, there's a balance, there's positives to both, but I like the fact that I can slow it down and stay on a spot and fan cast and hit every inch of that water column. Whereas as a boat, a kayak, you're kind of drifting past spots, hoping for a bite, you know, unless you're anchored up someplace. So.
Okay, as we're getting into like the kind of warmer weather, stuff like that, what would you suggest for just say a first time, maybe second, third time striper fisherman back bays? Like what ideal weather days would you be looking for? I mean, we kind of know what they do, but you know, from your perspective, what's the best either weather, water, or location to look for them this early?
No spot burning. We don't do spot burning here.
Yeah, definitely no spot burning. But we're giving more of a kind of a surrounding area of what to look for to give you a better chance at finding, you know, that one striper just sitting around.
I would say if you're just getting into the sport and you want to fish soon, I would say try and fish a river system that they're going to be spawning in. And find the warmest part of the day, the warmest part of the river, which would be a flat. If you can find flats, you know, that's where the water is going to be warmest. And if you pick an afternoon that's sunny in March or, you know, end of March, that's where the fish are going to be coming to find their food because they're, you know, looking for that warmer water at this time of year. So that's what my guidance would be.
That's pretty much the perfect answer I would have been saying. Flats, mud flats. Yeah, mud flats, you know, later in the day as the sun warmed up, the mud already absorbed all the heat. And then even if you could catch a low, nice outgoing tide too. So that warm mud really warming that upper water. It might be only 5-6 degrees, but that 5-6 degrees is going to matter.
Yeah, that does make a huge difference, especially if you think about like the difference between, you know, 45 degrees and 50 degrees. Like that's a big difference for fish feeding, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. It may turn them on. Yeah.
What's your PB?
Striper?
Yeah.
I believe it's 46 pounds, but as a boat fish.
Do you have a PB on land?
I do. That is, I believe it was 22 pounds. So nice. I don't have anything huge.
22 pounds. So we're looking at like 37, about 40-inch fish, if that's a fall fish.
It was actually a 40. It was in the fall. It was a 40-inch fish, but it was super skinny. Yeah. Like a lot of 40-inch fish, you would think would be bigger than 22 pounds.
Yeah, in the fall, usually a 40-inch fish, you're up in the upper mid-20s.
Yeah, but it was real skinny, and that was when I was a kid. I haven't beat that since then. Oof. Maybe this.
Oh, what's your PB? Qual, what's your PB?
My PB from shore was a 38 pounder caught off of Seaside Heights. No more. Actually, between Seaside Heights and like Manilocan, somewhere between. And that was 2016 during that incredible fall run we had. Came on a yellow tsunami talking popper. Everyone was chasing their fish down the beach. I remember this day like it was night and day. 20 guys chasing the pods down the beach. I slacked off because I don't feel like running. I'm in waders. I'm hot. I'm sweating. So I'm just like trailing like behind the whole crowd. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to lobby here. Yeah. And I'm just like popping nice and slow. And then a big wave broke. And then I didn't see the popper go down, but I just felt the weight and I just set. And then she just ripped line. Like she ran no tomorrow. From boat was actually this year on, my buddy, Chris, I can't pronounce his last name, Butcher, and on his boat. And it was a good club 46, 47 pounder.
Nice.
Caught him on a dock, super spook top water. Yeah. She was huge.
I've only caught one really nice striper. It was Easter, I think 3 years ago now, 2 years ago. Easter night, I was out there all by myself on the river, and I'll never forget this because it's a story. I'll share this real quick. So I'm going out. I'm trying to like get through my family dinner on Easter, right? And then I'm like telling my wife, I'm going fishing after this. I got to get out. I said, I've seen a couple of big fish caught on the river. I got to get out there. She goes, doesn't mean you're going to catch one. I'm like, whoa. So I obviously I had to get out at that point. And then I met up with my good friend, David Mundy from Northeast Jig Company. And we were fishing the river. Everybody left. I was like, I got to catch a fish. It was like 12:08, 12:09 at night. And I'm out there by myself. I got to work the next morning. I got to be at work at 7 o'clock the next morning. Next thing I know, my line's peeling out. I'm like, oh boy, here comes another catfish. Cause I was catching catfish all night and I'm reeling it in. Then the moment I see the silhouette laying on the beach there, I was beside myself because stripers have been the absolute, you know, monkey on my back. I've never been able to get a really nice one. And the fact that I was able to do so, I still get worked up thinking about that fish. You know, I was out there trying to take pictures by myself. I couldn't do it by myself and set my phone up on my chair and everything else. It was nuts, but it was the most euphoric feeling I've ever had fishing. Just catching that fish all by myself out there and, you know, being out there, I'm screaming. I go to call my wife. I said, I did it. I said some choice words. I won't share those here, but I did it. You were wrong. She's like, yeah, that's great. That's really nice. Can I see a picture of it? I'm like, wait a second. I just caught this big fish that I've been chasing since I was a teenager, and that's what you got for me. But yeah, it was, I'll never forget that night. That's probably my most incredible fishing memory. I just remember the rush through my whole body. And I've caught a lot of nice fish, but stripers have always been difficult for me to catch a nice one. So that fish will go down in history as probably my favorite fishing moment. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Very awesome. I feel like I'm getting kind of, you know, pumped up just
here. I'm getting worked up. I'm like getting warm.
You already told me this story before and I'm still getting pumped up.
I'm getting all warm and toasty talking about it, man. It's just making me, I'm going to go grab the fishing rod and get out.
Yeah.
I think blood worms.
I mean, I think all our goals, I mean, as surf casters, you know, beach walkers, jetty walkers, you know, side bank, you know, our goal is to catch that 50. You know, I told myself if I ever catch that 50 off the beach, I may retire and not target them no more. I'm taking a nice couple pictures. I'm gonna get a mount made, and then that's it. I'm gonna retire from striped bass fish, like literally, if I ever get that 50 off the beach. So
yeah, mine wasn't a 50. It was 43 inches, 46 pounds. I think I had a 28 inch girth.
Oh yeah, she's a fatty.
I was a fatty.
She was a fatty. I got one more question for Lee. He's the only one that I know that's pretty much confident in this. And I want to learn the secret because I suck at it. I'm going to admit I really suck at it. This is the only man I know that can master the lightweight bucktail in the back. I want to know your secret, like your setup, what you're using and how do you work it like literally, I want to know it all because I told myself I'm gonna try this this year.
I wouldn't say I master it, but it's just something I do have confidence in. I would say like maybe 85% of my bass in the back come from the bucktail.
Well, that's pretty much mastering, young man.
Well, there's times I'm out there and I'm like, I just did this last night, same tide, same moon, and I'm not catching fish with the bucktail. So it's like, you know, maybe I don't have it mastered. But anyway, I feel like if someone asked me what I caught a fish on and I tell them the bucktail, they say, oh man, I don't have any success with that, especially in the back. The first thing I say is, you know, well, how heavy are you using? And they're thinking like fluke jigging, mm-hmm. you know, like 1 ounce, 3/4.
Yep.
And to me, that's way too heavy. Like you cast in the back bay, you'll be dragging it on the bottom, you know, and your whole cast will be just dragging on the bottom. And I feel like your chance of catching a fish that way are very slim. So basically you have to read the current, and sometimes the wind plays into it, because if you go too light with a little bit of wind, you lose contact with it, you know, just like I'm sure you've all, you know, felt that. So if it's a little windy, that definitely makes it tricky. You kind of have to beef it up, and that takes away from what you're trying to do here, but you got to go as light as possible depending on how hard the current's pushing. So if you can picture your water column and the sweep is from right to left, you cast it out, you know, and it's going to sweep with the current. So the heavier the bucktail, the quicker it drops to the bottom. The lighter the bucktail, the longer it's going to stay suspended in that water column all the way across the sweep. So the lighter you can get away with, the longer it stays in the strike zone. So what I'll do is I'll always cast out current, and I'll just do little twitches. Twitch, but not real subtle twitches. I like to give it a, you know, a firm twitch and just work that all the way back in. Now, if you're using like quarter inch, quarter ounce, 3/8 ounce, and at the most, I'll use a 1/2 ounce, but very rarely I go up that heavy. And you can kind of keep it suspended with a little bit of current all the way in on every single cast. Like you're almost never hitting the bottom because you're using so light. Where I feel like the reason why some people feel like they can't have success with it is if you picture the same thing, that same current, you know, the same water column, you cast a 1-inch bucktail, you get within the first 2 or 3 feet of the sweep, it's already going to be on the bay floor bottom, and you're going to drag that in. It's never, you know, you could jig it and it might just pop up, but it's off the ground, but it's going to come, you know, right back into contact with it all the way in. So you're kind of just bouncing on the bottom, where you might get fish that way. But like, if you have fish feeding any part of the column, they're going to be in the strike zone a lot longer if you have as light as possible. And I always use a culprit worm trowler, usually white or purple. And I just got a couple other ones I want to try out this year. I'll give you some feedback later on the different colors, but I can't go wrong with white and white bucktail, or white bucktail and a purple trowler. That's pretty much all I use back there.
And gear wise, what are you throwing? Like what rod, like rod, you know, action line wise, like how light are you actually going?
So I like to go as light as possible with that too, just because of the more feel. Mm-hmm. An Avid Inshore or the Legend Tournament Inshore, and they are, I believe they're 1/4 to 3/4.
Is that like a medium?
Something like that.
Is that like a medium?
Yeah, it's like a medium. And you can get away with heavier than that. Like there's some companies that make a, like, I would say 3/8 or 1/2 to the 1 or 1 1/4. And that's perfectly fine too. You don't need to go that light. I just personally like that. Just, you know, it's fun. It's fun fishing as light as possible. You get like a 3,000 or 4,000 size reel, and, you know, fast action gives you a little flexibility with working the bucktail, and just that little twitch twitch, you know, every couple of turns, just getting a cadence, a rhythm. And you can change it up with your speeds. But I'd recommend going slower, but not slow enough to where you're allowing your bucktail to reach, you know, the bay floor and dragging it in like if it was a heavier bucktail.
So when we're saying twitching a slow crawl retrieve, like give and take, how far are you off the bottom of the sand or mud or whatever we're targeting on take? I know you say work the whole water column, but like so say we're looking at about 10 feet of water.
I would say most of the time it's going to be in less water than that. But if it's 10 foot of water, you're probably working. You have to crank it to keep it in the first 2 feet of the water column at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say somewhere between, you know, 3 and 6, 7 feet.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, even so, like I'm not opposed to like fishing, you know, close to the bottom. Right. If it's a shallower, you know, say 6 or 8 feet deep, you're going to be working from, you know, 3 to 7. You're almost coming in contact with the bottom, but you're still working that sweep. Like you're just going to have a lot more success the longer you stay in the strike zone. You can kind of translate that with any type of fishing, you know, or trout fishing or whatever. You know, you're doing a drift, the longer you're in the strike zone, the better chance that you're hooking up. Your chance is going to go way up.
There's really only two fish that I like to stay on the bottom for, and that's fluke and walleye. You know, other fish, you got to work all levels of the water column, especially stripers, because they're
anywhere.
Yeah, you see videos of them feeding underwater, and they're 1 minute the bellies will be on the bottom, the next time they'll be feeding on the top. It's hit or miss with them, so you got to really work everything and see what happens. But I stay on bottom with fluke and walleye. Everything else gets worked over as hard as I can.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's making sense to me, to you guys, like what I'm saying as far as is light, you know, the reason why you got to go lighter if you're going to do that, work them that way.
Yep, definitely. Because you won't have to work as hard keeping your bucktail off the bottom with, say, a quarter ounce than if you were to throw a three quarter ounce, because literally once you throw that three quarter ounce, it's literally sinking to the bottom right away. And then when you pop it, it doesn't travel far enough up. It may, but then the weight of it's going to draw it right back to the bottom. So if you're doing a quarter ounce, as you twitch it, it's going to stay up in the water column a little longer. And then as with the slow retrieve, so you literally, like you said, you'll be putting in the strike zone anywhere between 3 and 7 feet, 3 and 8 feet. And then, you know, then that's your job right there. It's just kind of find where the sweet spot is where the strike zone is at.
Yeah, I think once you do that and catch some fish, like gain a little confidence in it. I think that's a big part of it too. You gain some confidence just like any other way of targeting fish. But that's just something that I have a lot of confidence in. It's usually the first thing that I pull out to throw.
Yeah.
Not only that, I find that the heavier the lure, it just dampens the action. I mean, the heavier the jig, the bucktail, it dampens the action of the lure you're working. I fish for fluke if I can in the back with a 3/8 ounce jig head. You know, I try to go as light as I can get away with. Now it takes a while for me to get to the bottom. I got to really work specific areas a certain way, but if I can get away with 3/8, even lighter than that, that's what I'm doing. I mean, you want to get as much action out of whatever you're using as a lure as possible. And a heavy bucktail, heavy jig is just going to dampen it because it's going to rush it through the water column. You're not going to get any wiggle action from your tails. It's just going to go straight down. There's a certain amount of fish that'll bite that way, but that's not the most effective way to work a water column. You know, I'll even throw like a Z-Man lure on there just to get it to stay up a little bit longer because, you know, they have some floatability there with that elastic. Yeah. And that'll just keep it in that zone just a touch longer. I've really, really taken a liking to the Z-Man plastics the last year or 2 years. They really have made a difference for a lot of things I like to do.
Yeah, and it's just all a matter of like you in that strike zone a little bit longer, you might catch, you know, 4 fish instead of 1 or 2 fish. Just little differences, and the more you put the time into it, the more you figure those out.
I'm definitely going to lean on you guys this year for this soft plastic lightweight game. I'm going to lean on you guys, and hopefully you guys are going to show me, because growing up, if I threw anything lighter than 1/2 ounce, I must be fishing for something really, really small. because I'm used to throwing ounce and a half, 2 ounces off the jetties, you know, looking for bass that way. I mean, I understand it's probably the same concept with the twitching and stuff with a surf rod, but with that much current in 2 ounces, I get the feel for it. It's just something with, like, I don't know, like, sometimes I'll throw like a 3/8 ounce and I'll throw it and I feel like I'll retrieve and I'll pop it. For some reason, I'm literally feel like I'm popping it out of the water. Like I'm pulling it out of the zone. But the way you guys are explaining is you could twitch it hard, but you're not out of the zone. So, you know, that's kind of like what Lee said, you know, you got to have confidence in something you throw. And if you're confident enough to throw that bucktail and know in your head, imagining what that bucktail is doing underwater, then your confidence is going to build from that.
I mean, to piggyback on that again, like this past year, I, at the very end of this fluke season, I got into tossing quarter ounce jigs out on the beachfront for fluke. Like it takes a lot of practice. Number one, to work the current with the wind to be able to get that jig down to the bottom. But the action you get with a lighter jig, it's worth it. It really is. It's worth spending the time to know how to read the current and the wind and the beachfront in front of you to see what you should be throwing. I walk down to the beach lip and sit there and look around for probably 20 minutes before I even start fishing. It's really all about just kind of reading your surroundings and seeing what's necessary. I keep a little bit of everything in my bag, and you know, I wait to see what it's doing out there before I start throwing anything on. You know, there's a lot of minute details that you don't know until you're at that beach lip. So
makes a ton of sense.
All right, Lee, go ahead. Before we move on to our next subject, anything you want to touch bases on, Lee, one last time before we move on from stripers in the back? Any tips, tricks, techniques, just to let, you know, just give our audience an idea of, you know, something to help them out to become better fishermen this season early?
I would say, obviously, just put time in on the water. But especially summertime, you can catch fish all summer long in the back bays. It's something that, you know, a lot of us know that, but there's a lot of people that don't realize that. They say, oh, they were stripers running now. And I said, you know, they're not migrating through here, but there's still a lot of fish around. So if you focus on those, you know, those magic hours, golden hours, mm-hmm. around sunrise, sunset, you can find fish all summer long by targeting them at those, you know, those times. Even overcast days pretty much does the same as a sunrise or sunset bite.
Yeah. Great advice, man. Great advice. Let's move on to our next thing. Couple quick questions. If you had to target one freshwater fish for the rest of your life, what would it be? And we're also going to add, this is going to be the second one too. If you had to target one saltwater fish for the rest of your life, what would it be?
That's a tough question.
It is very tough.
You know, you're asking me where I could be happy catching like 5 different fish, 5 different days of the week, and I could still be happy every single day.
Right.
With freshwater, it would be a toss up between trout and bass. Probably largemouth bass. I feel like that's something that I've done, you know, when I was a kid. We used to try and catch some fish and live line them. And if you didn't get a pickerel come too quickly, you could chance you were getting a nice bass on largemouth bass on that. So I would probably say largemouth bass. And as far as the saltwater, I mean, you probably know my answer is going to be striper, but that's probably what it would be. Yeah. Just something that it's like, it just does get old to me.
All right. Well, those are two solid answers. I can admit, I don't think I ever stepped into that largemouth bass game. I don't know, as long as I've been fishing, I think I've never went largemouth bass fishing.
I'm not a largemouth guy either. I catch a lot of them as bycatch, but I, you know, they're all over the place. You can catch them. I haven't caught any real nice ones. I think my biggest one is like 5.3 pounds. I caught crappie fishing, believe it or not. You know, it was on a jig about that big in October. I was returning from a beach trip that absolutely stunk, and I stopped by one of my crappy holes, and I caught this nice bass just hanging out in like a foot of water.
that's a pretty nice fish, though, if it's somewhere up here. 5 pound bass is pretty nice fish.
That was a Delaware fish.
So
nice.
All right, Lee. So have you had any memorable recent trips that you'd like to share with us?
Sheesh. I would have to say the muskie trip that we were just on.
I was hoping you could say that.
Yeah, that was one of the most, it's kind of like you had it planned out for a long time. I had it planned since November. And like you always had in mind, like if it played out perfectly, that's how it would play out. Like, you know that there's a chance that you might not catch a fish all day. You also know there's a chance that you might catch 6 fish, which is what was happening.
And it's ridiculous.
It was basically how it played out. It was about as good as you could have planned for a day like that. It was cold. You know, we traveled to Virginia and fished with a good, really good guide, Sam Scott, and on the Upper James River, and which is a really good fishery for muskies. So that's why, you know, we kind of planned it that way. And I went with my two brothers, Joel and Seth, and my brother-in-law, Tom. And we barely were even set up, and you know, I hooked into a muskie. It was everything I could have ever imagined. It was pretty amazing. And we went out throughout the day, and Joel and Seth ended up catching fish. My brother-in-law Tom, he was the only one that didn't land a fish. He had a couple of chances to fish where he missed it, throwing some huge baits. It was pretty incredible. Something that was, you know, bucket list fish for me that I've, you know, always wanted to catch. I've never really put much time into targeting them, but now that I know the fishery a little bit better now, you know, with an excellent guide, like he's big into conservation. He's big into, you know, it's his livelihood. So he knows an awful lot about it. He educated us about them. You know, I have a few areas that I would like to, you know, around here that I know that, you know, whole muskies that I'm going to try and put some more time into it now that I know a little bit more about them. But it's something that, you know, they're incredible fish. You know, everyone was between 38 and 47 inches. So they were all pretty decent sized fish.
Yeah, man.
Now, who did you go with again? That was
It was Sam Scott from Blue Ridge Muskie. And he's based in like Buchanan, Virginia, that area.
Okay.
And I would highly recommend him. He's a really good dude, you know, and he knows his stuff. We tagged a good number of fish that day. And he's works with the, you know, the VA Department of Wildlife or whatever the, you know, commission is down there, and collects a lot of data, you know, works back and forth with them, and he's doing it the right way. I would highly recommend it.
Solid guy. So Sam's, once again, guy, ladies and gentlemen, it's that Sam Scott, Blue Ridge Muskie. I think he has a YouTube channel. I've checked it out. Solid guy, great personality, and he puts people on big fish. So if you guys are interested in muskie, it's a little ride for us up here up north, but like Lee said, it was totally worth it. Went 6 for 8. So that's 6 fish in a day for muskie is an incredible day. You get a good day is 1 or 2 fish. 6 fish in a day is an incredible day.
Unreal.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. I know, like people say, the fish of 10,000 casts or whatever, but we kind of got spoiled. I think I probably cast it about, you know, maybe less than 100 times that day before I hooked in the first one. But it's, you know, it's going to be a different ball game when I start chasing them around here and figuring out some patterns and where they might hold. But that's all part of the fun, you know, the hunt is part of the fun. That's what I enjoy too.
Yeah, fishing is all about the hunt. The catch is just a bonus.
Yep.
All right, Lee, do you have, so obviously you said muskies were a bucket list fish for you. What's the new bucket list fish now?
Shoot. I should show you my list. It's, you know, I got a long list, and a lot of it's fish beating bigger fish than what my last one was. So like, but I would say it's probably a toss up between, you know, bull red and tarpon. You know, they're obviously fish that you're not going to catch up here, but I've hooked into tarpon before in some big, big tarpon that, you know, didn't have any business throwing at, but I've hooked into him and never landed one. Joel's landed one. I was with him when, you know, he landed one. We caught, had a good amount, a few nights that we targeted him, but we, you know, came up short, and that's the story of them. But that's probably the top fish that I'd like to go after, either bull red or a tarpon.
I'm going to double down on that bull red myself. I'm targeting them then this year as well from the kayak. Actually, I have a couple dates set up with some friends. So some guys that are much better at it than me. I caught some smaller ones up to like 26 inches, but I need one of those big ones. So
that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I've done bull reds as a kid, you know, because like from our previous intro episode, like I said, I grew up in Sebastian. I mean, I grew up in Florida. Sebastian Inlet was my home water. So bull reds were like normal to us as kids. But, you know, as an adult, I haven't caught one in quite a few years. And just catching a red now, if I can catch a red in New Jersey, it's pretty much, I'll be set for life.
Yeah. I feel like in the back of my mind, like that's on my like bucket list, but that's not something that I'm like, you know, just totally preoccupied by, because, you know, most people that I know that catch them aren't really targeting them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, there's a few guys that do it and are successful, but I don't want to like spend all my time targeting them and, you know, just be frustrated because it's such a rare occurrence in Jersey. But obviously if I caught that, that'd be pretty amazing.
All right, Lee, is there a fish that you've been chasing for a long time that you have not been able to connect with? We've already talked about me with the trigger fish. I suck at fishing for those. Is there a fish that you've been targeting that you have not been able to line up yet?
For a while, I felt like I put a lot of time into weak fish, and I would just catch them here and there. And then the last year or so, 2 years, I feel like I had them not, I wouldn't say dialed in by any means, but I would say that was a fish that I put a lot of time into and just wasn't quite figuring them out, you know. But I would say that it kind of changed with this last year or so, and I caught some more weak fish, and I would probably have to say come back to like the tarpon, which I don't target them a lot, but that's something that like I feel like there's something left on the table where I got a taste of it, but you know, I didn't bring any to my feet. So it was like, I still got that itch, that, you know, that drive, that, but that's something that like, you know, obviously I only target them once or twice a year on a vacation trip. So it's, you know, if that answers your question, I would probably say that.
Tarpon on a fly. That's on my bucket list.
Yeah, I got to catch one first, not on a fly. And then I'll be, you know, tarpon on the fly will be on the bucket list.
Gotcha. All right. Do you have any solo adventures got planned coming up this year? Any you know, any trips or any, you know, things you got booked that are you very excited for coming up in 2021?
I wouldn't say that there's anything booked or, you know, indefinite plan. That Joel and Seth and I, the brothers, were hoping to do a Florida trip at some point in the next few months. So hopefully that works out. You know, that'll be something that I'm looking forward to doing if we can get it figured out and work it all out. That's something I'd be looking forward to doing.
Great. I'm looking forward to fishing with all you brothers this year. Definitely 100%, man. We got some plans. We'll get some footage out there for you guys. You know, just stay tuned, guys. I'm going to have all the Wakefield boys on the boat this year.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it every bit.
All right, Lee, last question for you, buddy. So now you guys had a pretty big announcement recently. Would you care to share that with us?
Sure. So it's kind of like if you want to say a dream come true or whatever, it's not something that like in the back of your mind, you like say one day maybe would happen. This is kind of, you know, a surprise for us or whatever, but I guess it was trying to think of how long, maybe a month or month and a half ago, St. Croix reached out to us and asked us to join the pro staff, myself and two brothers as well. And, you know, it was kind of like I had to, you know, reread it again. Like, is that what they're saying? You know, it's pretty awesome opportunity. And it's, you know, it's something that you know, I couldn't be more thrilled about. I have several friends that are part of their team already, guys that are doing a lot longer than me. And, you know, I feel like I'm barely even a half notch on the totem pole where they're, you know, at the top of their game for a long time. You know, they're, you know, some elite anglers to, you know, even be part of the team that guys like that is pretty incredible to me. So it's something that very exciting, and, you know, I look forward to for the next year to see, you know, what we can do with them.
That's a pretty incredible achievement. I'm jealous because I love St. Croix anyway. I use them myself. You know, you got that whole negative stigma out there about the whole pro staff, but something like this is different, I think, because, you know, they reached out to you. It's not like you were trying to get lined up on their pro staff, and you used their gear, to represent a company like St. Croix is a big deal. And I think that's awesome that you guys were able to pull that off. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing all the cool gear that you guys are rolling with when we're fished together now.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, we're super excited about it. And I'd be glad to, you know, swap out and let you cast anything or whatever we're using, you know, just as, you know, even if it wasn't that situation and what's yours is mine, you know, we're glad to anything in my bag, just like you would do the same for me. I know you've done that before anyway. So something we're excited about.
Yeah, man, you're one of my guys, man. So I share my stuff is your stuff when it comes down to it. So congratulations, man. That's a huge, yeah, huge deal. You know, that's like the big leagues right there when you're talking fishing. So that's a big deal. Congratulations, yeah, to you and Joel, yeah, and Seth. That's amazing. Yeah,
definitely big congratulations to you and your brothers, man. It's a big achievement. You know, St. Croix is a great name, great brand. You know, everyone loves their gear. And I mean, you guys earned it. Honestly, you guys earned it. Like, you know, I've only known you guys recently, you know, probably what, just a year or two, maybe at most. And I mean, you three brothers are literally like personalities. It's incredible. You know, you guys are very humble and we love that, everything about you guys. And you guys are you're just good people. You know what I mean? It's very hard in the fishing community to find just good people all around. And you guys honestly deserve everything that you guys are coming to, you know what I mean? So, I mean, once again, like, we'd like to let you, big congratulations.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I agree with everything he just said. You guys are great. You guys are great.
All right. So, we're getting near, let's see, about the hour 10 mark, somewhere around there. We're going to just start wrapping it up. Like, before we let you go and, you know, for you, let our guests go, is there any, if you wanted to put any plugs, you know, your social media page, businesses, whatever you may be, if someone wanted to reach out to you just to talk, had questions, or if they just want, like, love the personality or who you are and your brothers, who they are, where can they find you?
The easiest place would probably be just to reach out to our Instagram page, Saltwater Art Fishing. You know, the messages or DMs are open always. And I can't promise you I have an answer for everything you might come up with, but I'll promise to either tell you that I don't know or, you know, do my best to help anyone out. You know, I don't think that I'm, you know, the best fisherman in the world, but if there's, you know, some little thing that I can help somebody out with, that's, you know, I'd be super happy to do that. And as far as anything else to plug, I don't really have anything else to plug. Just if you have subscription to Fisherman Magazine or On the Water Magazine, you know, you might see me pop up in there from time to time. Not something I do on a regular basis, but here and there, you know, do a little bit of writing for them. Jim Hutchinson on the Water, Fisherman Magazine, and Jimmy Fee from On the Water, your friends of mine, reach out to me from time to time and ask if I have any content or anything I want to touch on. And so from time to time you might see something in those magazines.
Cool. Well, that excellently, listen, we were honored to have you as our first guest. Couldn't have been happier with the guy that we put on our first episode that's live with a real guest. So thank you for coming on board. We appreciate it. I guarantee you that everybody will see this guy again, see his brothers. You know, there'll be regular guests on the podcast because they're our people. So we appreciate you sharing your story with us today and look forward to bringing you back on and fishing.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate you having me. It's an honor to be a part of this. And I told you guys before, I'm like super excited. I can't wait to see who your next guest is. I can't wait to hear, you know, the pilot episode. I'm really, really happy to be a part of this. Can't wait to, you know, do it again sometime. I feel like this however long hour or whatever I'm flying by. And I feel like it's like, you know, just buddies chatting. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool thing you guys got going on here.
Thank you. We agree.
All right.
we could certainly touch on some other things, but we'll save that for the next episode.
Mm-hmm. We'll definitely save it for our next episode. But besides that, have a great night, Lee. Me and Dan's gonna stay on for a couple extra minutes. But besides that, looking forward to fishing with you this season. And that's about it. Tight lines, brother.
Tight lines, Lee.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too, man.
Nice chat. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great night.
Thanks for jumping on. See you.
All right. Dan, how you think that went?
That was awesome, man.
Dude, I loved it. Every minute.
That was awesome.
Every minute of it just makes me smile. I'm just like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to pack my bag, put the boat together, throw it all in, and let's go bass fishing. Let's go striper fishing.
Yeah, man, let's do it.
besides that, let's wrap this up. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for joining us for our very second episode. And if you guys do like what you heard today, make sure you guys can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Alexa, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castro, CastBox, and also Podchaser. You can also find us on Facebook, Tide Chasers Podcast, and we're also on IG. That's where you're going to get the latest and greatest news and next upcoming guests. Our IG handle is Tide_Chasers. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, our IG handle is Tide_Chasers. We'll be having a YouTube channel pretty soon. We'll keep you guys updated on that. Besides that, any last words, Dan?
Yeah. Hey, we are very passionate fishermen. We love this. We love it so much that we want to talk to you about it. So, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, we're trying to grow this, talk to as many people, you know, fill a void that's in the Mid-Atlantic region right now for this kind of consumption of fishing, you know, beyond just actually getting out there. There's a huge market for it, and we want to be a part of it. You know, you could help us out by liking and sharing our content, and by, you know, just constantly tuning in every week. We promise we're going to bring you fresh content every week. Possibly going to add on some short little stuff here and there just to keep content flowing. But we will be releasing a weekly podcast. It's going to be uploaded on Sundays to be able to be consumed on a weekly basis for you. So we look forward to chatting with you, and we look forward to interacting with, you know, everybody out there and bringing on new guests every week and talking fishing, baby.
That's all it is. That's all we want to do. We want to make sure we bring you guys in, make sure you guys are sitting on the round table with us. We're all friends. It's just going to be a fun chat. Stay tuned for our next few guests. We're going to be kind of sneak peeking, a little teaser on our very third episode coming up pretty soon. So just keep an eye on our social medias. We'll let you know who our third guest is. And if you're interested in becoming a guest, or if you're a captain, a local fisherman, bait and tackle shop, lure maker, any of those, if you are interested in being a guest, just feel free to reach out to us through Instagram, DMs, Facebook messages. Just let us know. And we'll talk some things out. We're just looking for really good, you know, just all around good fishermen that just love to talk fish. You know, if you have that obsession, we want you on as one of our guests. Besides that, have a great night, ladies and gentlemen. You have a good night, buddy. Tight lines. I'll see you soon.
See
you.
Thank you.